Welcome to Money and Racism, the podcast that delves deep into the intersection of finance and racial disparities. I'm your host and money EQ specialist, Dr. Joe Burns. I'm here to guide you through a series of thought-provoking conversations with people of color that aim to uncover the intricate relationships between money and systemic racism. Whether you're curious about the subject, seeking insights, or ready to join the fight against systemic injustices, money and racism is your space to learn, discuss, and take action. So, join us every week as we engage in free-flowing conversations that challenge the status quo and encourage critical thinking. Together, we'll work towards a more equitable and just financial world. On today's episode, we have Justin Hurdle Price. He is a speaker, facilitator, and strategic communications specialist who started facilitating conflict resolution workshops for young people and adults at the age of 10. He has co-facilitated workshops in schools for nonprofits and at national conflict resolution conferences all over the country. He worked as a trainer and coach for youth from all different backgrounds and helped design workshops for parents, teachers, and young people. His current work for Her Communication Solutions as a strategic communication specialist involves designing cutting-edge workshops that address the issues of the current times, including topics like talking with teens and young adults about racism and working with and managing people who have anxiety. He is also a co-facilitator in the On the Matter of Race program and for the Youth Thrive Educational Services video workshop series, Transforming Conflict for College Students. He has also served on panels and been on local television shows. As a young Black man from the Bronx, he is committed to exposing others to new ways of having difficult conversations that can help resolve conflicts. Welcome to the show, Justin. I'm super excited to have you on today, man. Thanks for saying yes and being here for what the conversation is going to be.
Dude, yeah, pleasure's mine. Thanks so much for having me.
You know, super excited. For those who might look at the name and see this episode, your mom was episode number one. Thanks to her and helping me even start having this conversation and put this project together and really encouraging me over and over to have it. And then your support in this project as well has been very much felt on my side. And I'm just like, again, super excited to have you here for today's conversation and help share and spread this message, I think, because that's how I kind of feel like it's turning into, right? A spreading of a message of, hey, here's the problems and here's what we need to do to fix them. So again, man, thanks for being here and thanks for your support in all this part of what I'm doing. And let's get into it.
Absolutely. You're doing some dope stuff. So any way I can be a part of it, again, the pleasure's mine. So let's do it.
You know, one thing I think that people are going to be really surprised as they listen to this episode is, and one thing I can't not bring up, right, is your age. You pack so much wisdom for such, as I would say, a young person being in your early 20s. But man, like, it just, if people listen to what you have to say, they would never guess that you're, you know, in your early 20s and spouting the things you do. So just kind of something I want to call out there, because again, it's like, who are the people that are we're talking to and all that fun stuff. I think it's important because a lot of times I think what happens, especially when we think about, well, both these subjects as we mix them together, right? Money and racism. A young person can't have a voice or wisdom enough to really make an impact. And I think sometimes society makes those that are like college age say, oh yeah, you got to go learn first and then maybe we'll listen to you, but we're not going to listen to you yet. Go get your receipts and then come back and show us that you know what you're doing. So I think it's really cool. You've been in this work for a long time. You're getting at it and you got a lot of wisdom to share. So again, just kind of put context around the conversation and, you know, part of who you are and the breadth and depth of wisdom that you have is just unlike any other early 20-year-old that I have ever met in my life.
That's a pleasure to hear, bro. I mean, seriously, I often get called an old soul since a baby. I've apparently had this type of energy to me, this energy of, as some people put it, like I've been here before or whatever that means. Whereas for me, you know, I really just wanted to develop awareness of not just what's going on around me, but the role that I play, whether I'm taking things on or letting things go and why I'm doing those things, right? I really wanted to develop that awareness. And so, yeah, I definitely have to remind myself, like, I am 22, so go out and have fun and be a 22-year-old and still enjoy this time as it is already going by very fast in some ways, but it just stemmed from also just raising of me with my parents and the village that it took to raise me and my brother and, you know, other young people in my family. You know, we're definitely blessed to have some of these sources around us as literally family. Not just people that we could call up if we need advice to get the unconditional love from these types of people too. It's definitely been a contributing factor. So I really appreciate the words, seriously, because you got work that I trust as well. So yeah, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
And it's cool. So for you, when you look at it, like, I know you've been doing conflict resolution work for a long time, which also dovetails right back into the whole racism conversation. When you think of these two things that seem like, how do they go together, right? Money and racism, right? And it's what I struggled with for a long time as I was putting the show together and when I was looking like, hey, what's the approach I want to take? You know, what comes up for you? What's the angle in which you see these two things in the world and how has it affected you?
That's a great question. And I think for me, the relationship is that, especially with money, I've equated money with opportunity. And then I equate racism with lack thereof. So it's kind of like this yin and yang, this push and pull kind of force that definitely works within me when I start thinking about these things. And just some context for me, I grew up and still currently live in the Bronx, Bronx, New York. So it's one of the five boroughs. But I went to very predominantly white institutions growing up, right? Because when we hear good schools, we're thinking, well, what does that really look like? And these are schools that, you know, are elementary or middle school buildings and up that somewhat look like or resemble college campuses that I've actually got to be a student at. For me, my relationship with money early on was very tainted because being in these places, I was not only exposed to people who had money, people who had the nice house, the nice cars and things like that. It was wealth, right? Like I really got to see wealth and what wealthy people lived like and how they acted, or at least from what I thought, that's how it was, right?
Yeah.
When you're younger, things are a lot more black and white. Now I notice there's so many different complexities to just how people are people, right? But starting out, I mean, I remember being in middle school and just seeing kids sixth grade with Gucci belts and Gucci backpacks and the newest iPhone, whatever one was dropped at that time. And these are things that, it's not that I never had them or anything like that. I just got them on my own time. So for me, it was very difficult growing up to walk into those spaces where a kid is spending the majority of their day, right? When they're not at home, they're at school, or they're at some sort of learning environment for the majority of their day and in the care of other people, also coexisting with other people. So there were a lot of conflicts that came up both internally and externally. I definitely got messed with for clothes that I wore that wasn't up to date with what's cool or whatever at the time. And to, you know, take the train places where kids were having drivers and things like that. It definitely strained my relationship very early with money in the sense of just how I viewed it. I still see it as opportunity, still saw it as opportunity, but the racism piece, being a young black man in these rooms and in these spaces who's also not going to take any, I'm outspoken, as you know, Joe, and
yeah,
but also educated in the areas that I'm educated. And it was very difficult to realize the facts of the situation of even just the generational aspect of that not being there for us, right? Where I'd seen properties that were, you know, million-dollar homes being passed on and on and on generation to generation as if, you know, you're passing down books to your child, right? So definitely a lot there for me. It was a lot to unpack growing up.
Because just listening to this, right, I think back to my growing up years. Not that I grew up wealthy, right? But I grew up kind of middle class and in a nice area. And even then, like you talked about, you know, how kids had iPhones like sixth grade, stuff like that. I'm like, huh. In my mind, instantly went to, oh, what did we have, right? Because I aged myself a lot. Like cell phones didn't exist when I was that age, you know. But I remember like high school, right? Because even a little bit, like not comparing to this, but trying to like put myself in, what would that feel like, shoes? And I remember in high school, right, there were kids, they turned 16, parents would buy them brand new cars. You know, you had like brand new Mustangs, like back, you know, in the late 90s. So these were like brand new, the muscle league of the cars. I remember a girl came to school one day in like a brand new Corvette.
Yep.
Just stuff like that. So, and it shows you, I think, like you're saying, like the money equals a lot of the opportunity because it's not necessarily the money itself having the opportunity, which it can, but it's like you have the money because of the opportunities you've been given. Mm-hmm. And that you have access to.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing too. I think the kids get it, right? A lot of times I think we pass it off as adults. I don't have children, so I haven't had to deal with this, but I have young people in my life. And sometimes I think we forget what it is to be like a kid and that you just get it. You might not understand it, but you see it, right? You internalize it and then you create whatever, I call them stories or experiences off of that. And then you start living life that way, however that's feeling from a very young age, which in some cases is good, but a lot of cases it doesn't serve us going forward. You know, so as you're having to deal with this stuff in school, yeah, I can see definitely how that's problematic without having some conscious thought around it or having good parents to kind of mold some of those perceptions. But then you just go through and be like, well, if I don't have money, then what, right? Mm-hmm. Or like you also said, you know, the clothes you wore, right? And being made fun of or people getting after you for the clothes you wore and just simple things like this that you as a child, you have no control over. You can't be like, hey, I don't like the clothes I'm wearing. I'm going to go buy some new ones because you don't have, back to the money, you know, you don't have the money or the opportunity to go do that, right? You're bound to your parents and whatever they can do for you at the time, which also puts kids in a very hard predicament because they can't control that. And if you don't grow up wealthy, then, I mean, you're just kind of stuck with where you're at, right? And where it's that mix, that's got to be pretty tough.
Yeah. I can at least say that, yeah, not growing up with a lot of money and I appreciate that I was able to still be a kid. So even as that was happening, like I still very much loved and enjoyed being outside. I'm a sports kid, so throwing a ball around, you know, something like that, running around, playing basketball, you know, just with friends and things like that. Whereas for some of these kids that really did live those lives and their parents had to, from what I saw, had to often not be around at the house to bring in those types of funds. So a lot of times it was weekends or a week of that kid being home alone in this huge place, right? With more than enough room for anything and everyone that you could possibly have around. And that's when things like parties started coming in. That's when people started having people over and you know how that goes, hanging out. And so it was very interesting too to go through because I just felt this disconnect. Not just feeling like I was, you know, more mature and outspoken and older than I always have been, but that I literally as a 14, 15 year old, you know, I still enjoyed the way that a toddler or an infant would run around in a field and be outside all day. Like that was still my thing. I wasn't necessarily ready to start getting into anything that adults started to do when they have time and opportunity to just kind of do what they want. For the most part, I know that's not the life for everyone, but when you have that time, I guess you have more options. And for me, we just didn't have that time. The time we had, we were using it to try to get to certain levels and still be us and still be people and the hearts and energies that we are, even if some of these things start to come. And so it was very interesting growing up in these spaces, right? Because again, you're going to school. So I had to see these kids all the time. There was some new something every day where for me, it's like, you know, I'll wear my shoes so they get holes in them, right? Like I'm totally cool with that. And I'm totally secure in who I am and how I was raised. And I'm not saying that they weren't because they were wearing nice stuff. That's not at all what I'm saying. But it was just definitely more of a reinforcement for me of just enjoy what's going on right now. There will be plenty of time to stress and work and give your time and opportunities to building the life that you want. I really did enjoy being a kid. I had a great childhood. So I can say that calmly and confidently. So,
yeah, makes me think of like in my own childhood, right? Because we were that way. I mean, I'm like at the tail end of Gen X. If you watch TikTok, anybody right now, right? There's a bunch of Gen Xers on there calling ourselves feral and that, you know, but I remember those days, like in the summer, even after, you know, during school year, we'd come home, drop our stuff off, and then we're outside until dark. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of fond memories of, you know, out playing football in the backyard or doing basketball in the driveway.
Manhunt in the neighborhood. Absolutely. We were all about that. All about that.
Just understanding, you know, your neighbors and connecting with them and having fun, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that we always say that, hey, opportunity is there because of money, but sometimes some of those opportunities are self-created as well, out of necessity, I would say, because that's all you have, right? So out of necessity, well, this is what we have. What can we make from it?
Yeah.
Definitely doesn't go without its own hardship.
Yeah, even when you get to a certain level, status that you want to achieve, I'd say that's when the control even comes in more to really create the kind of life you want to live. So I know that I've done that for myself, even without the funds. But when I have them, like it's still my choice. I could completely move away from everything I know and everything that's comfortable, right? Or not, and stay where I feel good and give to my community or find that balance, right? It's really completely up to you. And I think that just the more money you have, the more choices you have to do stuff and what you want to do. And it really also is up to you, like how you let the money define you, who you become once you have the funds that you're looking to have, right? And once you've achieved that, there's definitely celebration that's needed for that, right? Time, work, blood, sweat, tears, right? You know, all of that gets put into building what you want. But I think there's some sort of notion that once you reach these certain levels, you kind of like don't have to do that, or you can step out of the feeling space, the human space, right? Where you can kind of just access whatever. And I would say that that's where it's more crucial and most crucial to come back home and remember where you're from and remember who helped you get there and to keep that humility. We're still humans to the end of the day. We got to stay that, and we don't want to become the amount that we work towards.
Oh, 100%. And I totally agree with you, right? I tell my clients, you know, money's just like fuel. It just amplifies or fuels the person we already are on the inside. And I like how you say, sometimes we just got to come back home and realize where we came from. No matter how successful we are, I think it helps, again, that humanity side of us. Because if not, then we tend to forget. And you can see that in society a lot, where people tend to forget, like, hey, there's a human element to a lot of this, right? And I think the same, you know, bridging that into talking about racism overall, right? I think that's a big thing lost when we start looking at whole communities of people who society says, oh, they shouldn't have blah, blah, blah for whatever reason, right? We're forgetting, like, these are actual humans we're talking about here, right? This is not just like a problem we got to take care of. These are humans that need help, that might need some guidance, need something. And why can't we provide that for them, right? They might just need the opportunity, like you were talking about, looking at going to school with these families.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe, hey, we just need the same opportunities, because without them, then how can it even be close to an equitable playing field? Not even equal, like equal is like not even close to getting there, but how can it be equitable, because there's been so much damage done throughout history to the Black and Brown communities overall. And it's hard to say, hey, you know, we just need to change a couple things and it will all go that way, because we both know that that's not the case, right? There's a lot that's got to change, because if not, then, I mean, we're just going to keep living the same history that we've always lived.
Right. And we are, I 1000% believe that we are a human race, and the human race that wants to change a lot of things, right? And I think that there's just a piece of, well, what do you have to give up in order to get there? And it's a real question. It's a real concern completely, right? Especially because we're building of this building of a better tomorrow. We don't even know what tomorrow looks like. So I completely understand how giving funds or giving time, giving emotional capacity to something that you don't know is guaranteed. Like, it's a natural human reaction to be like, okay, well, what are we doing here? Like, what's happening? I don't know if I really want to do that. It's just the fear of the unknown. But I feel like if we did start just, as you said, leveling out that playing field a little bit, just exposing people who we know haven't been exposed to certain things in life that they honestly are granted. It's very interesting. I know a lot of young people of color who I was their first experience going out in a restaurant and them being served to, like in a place of service where you're supposed to order and someone's supposed to write it down for you, get it right, bring it to you, right? They thought that that was something you get when you're wealthy, right? When you've reached these certain levels and things like that. And I'm like, dude, no, this is easily attainable, but you also deserve it. You work, you're building that awareness, you're asking questions, you're being curious, you're not taking everything at face value. And again, this is specifically young people that I'm talking about who I know have had this experience. And I said, that gets rewarded, right? And it gets rewarded quicker than you think. And even though it may not be at the levels in which you want it, when you want it, that doesn't devalue where you are in your journey. I often found being in these private white institutions for school, even looking at white kids that had the wealth, they were comparing what the wealth looked like. You know, well, it's like, oh, well, I've got this. And even though you've got this and you're living pretty much like me more than anyone else, like, I'm still better, right? And I'm still welcomed into more, or I'm still deserving. And it's like, you know, there really are levels to all this stuff. Wealth is, to me, a very subjective term. So as I've gotten older, it just means there's more to it, to my definition that I've added. I don't think I've taken anything out per se, but it's just a very, very interesting thing to have lived. Again, I'm 22. I have 10 plus years working with young people in conflict resolution specifically, and I'm seeing this stuff like firsthand. I'm going to school for the week, and then the weekend it's a conference or a speaking gig at a school that's completely underserviced. It was such a dialectic that I had to wrestle literally every day growing up, you know, being that exposure to someone else while also still aspiring to more for me. It's definitely a part of that, you know, we lift as we climb kind of mentality.
Yeah. And it's interesting too. There's so much good here. Like, I'm like, okay, where do we go next? When you look at both conversations of money, you talked about, like, you know, even the white kids comparing like what their parents, basically their wealth and who's better, and that kind of unspoken caste system that gets placed, right? Because we think about it overall, and how we're programmed as humans is, oh, if we give up something, it's bad.
Right.
You know what I mean? But sometimes giving up some old beliefs or some old habits aren't bad. That's actually liberating and helpful, right? So it's really a rework of the brain to be like, because we're giving something up doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad.
Yeah.
Right. And when we look at society as a whole and racism in America, like, there's a lot that white people need to give up so that we can start fixing some of these systems. And the problem is they all think, well, this is what I know. We feel comfortable. Right. And we're like, oh, this is what I know. So yeah. I'm just going to keep holding to this old belief. And it's like, that's not really helping anybody anymore, though. It's not even helping you. You're just stuck in place. That's where my brain starts going. And you mentioned that. I'm like, yeah, I got to touch on that because it's so important for the change to happen. Right. If I'm so caught up in my own beliefs, you know, caught up, say, hey, this is how it has to be, then I'm unwilling to start doing things that need to happen for change to happen, to bring the equitability between the different communities in a way that everybody can, as you said, you know, climb together. Because if not, then are we really that better off? Like, we feel like we are. And I think it's a short-term feeling, but overall, when if you actually take a step back, we're not that much better off. You know what I mean?
I agree. I really do. And I love that you started to touch on that, because I feel very strongly on this, in that this world is very complex. And we are very complex beings that coexist with one another on such complex soil. So I don't fault anyone who feels like, why would I fix what isn't broken, especially when it comes to the way they live their life. I don't fault that at all. But it's one of those things where I just feel like we all know, yes, there are certain words in the dictionary that have been there for I don't even know how many years, but they're adding to the dictionary like all the time, right? So our language is changing all the time. And with all of these changes, there is an internal reaction. And so, not a scientist, not trying to come off as one, right? It's like, you gotta feel that. Like, you, how do you not feel that shift? And I can see how it's uncomfortable to lean to, but when you step into it, just like, okay, what's this new environment for me? What could it teach me? How's it going to serve me? How would I show up in this new environment? Then I think just living that way, there's just so much more, as you said, liberation. I've seen young people of color, they're older than me, but I've seen them when I was younger and when they were younger, where some of their wildest dreams, right, was just to be a manager at the chain store, like a Macy's or something, right? Like, that was their dream. If they get that, they're good, right? And whatever, if that's what you aspire to, great, right? And my point is just that there's so much more out there. And there's so much more out there that a lot of people who see it as a blessing and others see it as kind of something they deserve. But I feel like we're not entitled to anything in this life. We leave unfinished products, right? So we leave with, even at 90 years old, so many things that we could have thought of for the next 100 years, right? Like a new lifetime. As I said, to know that you expose someone to something bigger and better, right? You planted that seed, to be around long enough to see them water it, right? I've seen those same people who had those goals for themselves and those aspirations make it to executive level positions in corporate America. And they're working all over the world. They're working with not only young people, but adults too, some in education, some in the judicial system, like just all over, where it started there, but they got exposed to something different, but allowed themselves to step into the unknown of, okay, this is uncharted territory, but let me explore. That's really, I think, the way to live. And that's the way to go about the out with the in and old with the new. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I feel like that's just a necessary thing that we need to do as people to really maximize who we are and maximize our connection to our souls, to our brains, and to our hearts, and how that all plays out. You know, it all comes out in behaviors.
Yeah, 100%. It's very interesting what you're saying. Like, I think it goes back to kind of what we started with, that opportunity, right? Because I get it. And there's a lot of studies done out there about people, and not necessarily, you know, white versus black, but just communities of people and what's the communities they grew up in and what's the opportunities that they end up with. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool, some of these studies. I think the original study I read was like, is the American dream dead? What is it? Work really hard and you can make a lot of money, right? That's like the premise of it all. You can buy a house and do all that. You know, the unspoken part of that is, unless you're black or brown, then it's a whole different set of criteria for you to even get that, if it's even possible. Mm-hmm. With everything and how the systems are set up, it's always the unspoken, you know, the quiet part, right? That's never said out loud.
Right.
You know, as time goes on, the quiet part is being said out loud and people are showing who they are. But anyway, so going back to that, and it's like, it showed how much that opportunity to people that were in, you know, higher paying professions, people who were executives, people like, right, having that kind of unspoken mentorship for children was actually helping them make it possible. In communities where that wasn't the case, then it wasn't. Back to, you know, your example there, and I've known people too, where their biggest aspirations were like to manage a store or something. That's cool. Like, I'm not downplaying that at all. However, if that's not what you want in life, then you have to be shown it. And us as humans, we have to be shown that it's possible. And a lot of kids, especially in the communities of color, who don't have these opportunities, just don't see it's possible because they're never exposed to the opportunities. And so if you don't see it, then it's hard to dream when you can't see.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish that I could have, as a kid, woken up and felt like one day I could be president. Because I also remember life before Obama, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't even possible. At least that's how it felt. Like, it wasn't even possible for me, right? Because I didn't see it. Once I saw it, and I'm like, okay, maybe I can't be president, but I could go here. I could go here with it. I could go here with it, right? And I love what you touched on earlier in our discussion of creating these environments for ourselves, right? That's what people of color have gotten very good at. I definitely believe the American dream is possible, you know, for everyone to achieve if that's just what they want to achieve it by. Like, if that's how they want to do it, if this is the criteria, cool. I think everyone could do that. But for some people and for certain groups, that word dream is almost dangerous because we don't see enough of us in certain lights and certain respects that we know we can be in and thrive, right? So it's very interesting when you hear stories of, you know, that kid who was on the street in a gang, something like that, living a tough life, but still had skills and still had value, made it to corporate America and made it to all of their goals and more. And I've always thought, yeah, if you can manage this, that's on the street or that's wherever, you know, working with what you got, easily you could be in this kind of space managing a business or managing a team of people in a business. But because you haven't been exposed to that, you're already so limited. And I naturally, as a kid, I just could tell there were just things bigger than, you know, my neighborhood and bigger than my conditions. That's not an easy thing for anyone of any race or any walk of life to come to terms with. I'm happy I started that process sooner in my life and earlier in my life, because I think I'll just be all the more disciplined even by the time I reach 25, 30. That's not too far from now, if you think about it, which is kind of busy. But, I try not. But I'm telling you, man, just the exposure. I've been fortunate enough to travel and have parents who did some traveling themselves for work, doing conflict resolution in different places, different countries. I really am blessed to be a part of, you know, my resume and my repertoire and a part of my culture, right? Like, my culture as a whole is accepting and adapting something from other cultures that has somehow triggered me or added to what makes me who I am. So I feel like I'm a walking collection of different collectives, right? However, all of that was from exposure and opportunity. Even if I didn't have the credentials, even if I didn't get the job, even if someone went with someone else over me to speak at their school, I was still a part of the running, right? As a 14-year-old with other adults talking this stuff. And that really was just a blessing to have. It's brought me so far in my life. And it's only the beginning of the beginning, as you know, Joe, for me personally.
Yeah, you're just...
So much of that comes from just showing me there is more than your local deli, than your diner spot where you're a regular. Like, remember where you come from and always come home, check in, but you can go see other stuff. You're allowed in these other spaces. That was the biggest piece.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed because I wasn't there. And people that looked like me weren't there.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk forever on just that alone. I want to get into a lot of what you're doing. One shameless plug for this whole show is if you go and listen to the episode by Dr. Vanessa Perry, she talks about all of that, right? Because she says right now there are two CEOs in the Fortune 500 who are Black, and that's it, right? So again, looking at this, like, and we talked about gatekeepers and the whole corporate problems and all that. So that's a great episode to go listen to. But I wanted to make the point here is, like, for you, like, seeing Obama as president, that unlocked, like, hey, maybe it's possible. The more we can get skilled people, because that's the thing, like you mentioned, as you live on the street, right, there's a lot of skills you get. And that's the thing, like, with the Black and brown communities, is they're not lacking skills for these jobs, right? They're lacking in that opportunity again. The biggest problem with that is they're not being given that opportunity, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. There really are young people, right? You know, I'm not sure across all of the collectives of people, right? But definitely growing up, I saw it. White kids getting passed down, like the keys to this home or the keys to a business, right? I've seen that. Just the not having to go through a fair and due process to getting some of the roles that they have. And that once they have them, they can't even really appreciate what it is they're doing.
Yeah.
And again, it's not to say that this is like all people or all white people or all whatever.
No.
This is just from my experience. As you said, yeah, there are so many kids that if they just saw it, even if they just saw a principal that looked like them, right? Even if they just saw a government elected official that looked like them, right? As I did. This is a problem with, you know, at least the Black community that, you know, I can speak to. Not looking at them once they reach certain levels as like a sellout.
Oh, yeah.
Or like they're out of touch with reality because of whatever. And yes, there are certain cases where that happens. And that's across all walks of life. But that very, very prominent in my culture, in my community, in my people. And it's not to say that I don't love LeBron and I don't love, you know, Biggie and Tupac and like, you know, all these great poets, honestly, of what they do. It's to say, though, like in the spaces that we don't dominate, let's show them we can at least be in the room. I mean, I'm still getting some of that to this day. Even you telling me that Fortune 500 fact, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all. At all, I didn't know that. And that's
super crazy, right? Like
crazy to think about. That's crazy to think about. And it's crazy to think about just how many people were passed up for us to even have those two.
Yep.
Who are qualified. And if maybe aren't 10 out of 10 qualified, you know, 8 out of 10 or 7 out of 10, and they can work with the other remaining points that you need to have them worked with. It's a very interesting thing. And I think that makes me, now that I even hear that just now, that makes me want to stay in corporate America and see how far I can get there personally. I mean, hey, if I could be 3 or whatever, like, you know, that'd be sick. But even hearing that, it's making me think right now on live recording, it's possible.
Yeah.
We're there. It's not many of us, but we're in these rooms. And that's enough for me.
Nice. I like your optimism on that.
Yeah.
There's a lot that's got to happen for you to get there, right? Which I think just leads me into kind of your work and what you do, right? Because like you mentioned it before, and some people are like, wait, he's 22 and he's been doing conflict resolution and this kind of stuff for like 10 years. Probably more than that.
People get that one. They try to do the math. I'm like, if it works,
yeah. But talk to me about that. Where did it start? Where is it at now? And kind of what have you learned along the way and the opportunities maybe you've had presented to you because you've been doing this for so long?
Yeah, absolutely. Great questions. Yeah, man. So, I mean, both my parents, you know, my mom is episode 1, you said, I believe, Dr. Lynn Moore.
Yep.
That is my mom. She has 2 sons. I'm the youngest. So my older brother, Jabari. We both have been right at our parents' hips at any sort of conference that they were going to, any trainings that they led in schools, especially considering that a lot of their work early on was based out of New York City. So it was very much, you know, the connect to schools that needed just facilitation, right? Just skills being presented, just mediation. Like, how do we get through this without getting violent? How do we get through this without kicking this kid out, right? So reasonable punishments, et cetera, the list goes on. And so I just being presented with all of this and then being presented, honestly, with kids who just had it so much harder than we did, right? Like of all walks of life, just people who had it harder than we did. It was nothing but the seed of perspective being planted and watered with every event that we went to. So we were trained in this just as much as, you know, you train for any type of sporting event or a game or whatever, right? We were given the skills, we were given reps to learn them and talk about them in the house. And, you know, we really did grow up in that when a conflict comes up, yes, work with the tools that you have, which sadly, a lot of tools that young people have are tools that promote violence, that keep violence alive. But we were very much encouraged to not leave those tools behind, just to grow the capacity in which we're holding our tools in so that we can add more. You know, as I said, going to school, having that perspective, it was a push and pull every single day. You know, I could see when a teacher was trying to belittle a kid or belittle me rather than, you know, really use skills and things like that. So it definitely caused a strained relationship with, for me early on, you know, school and authority and things of that nature, especially also being in these schools where the authority rarely looked like me. And if they were an authority, they were an authority for 45 minutes of my entire day, you know, of a school year, right? So it's not even like that a lot of time adds up to really a percentage of authority over a kid and their educational future. Also, taking that into account, it made it very easy for me to, you know, not take things at face value. I was definitely being exposed to a lot of great stuff and a lot of great people, right? People who just love working with the heart, love working with the soul, love working with the mind, the body, and then the people who work with it all. And then from there, you know, just I met so many people along the line, along my life that have truly helped contribute to, you know, the patience I have today, that have attributed to the tools that I have, that have attributed to the capacity I hold the tools in. But getting there was very difficult. It was a push and pull every single day. It was a push and pull to even get to the point where, you know, I could really kind of release myself of certain things to just be in the moment, right? And just enjoy what is for what is and not worry about what isn't because it isn't. So as hard as the work has been, because this is emotional stuff, right? We're working with emotions here.
Yep.
That's the hardest thing to tap into with a human being. Right? Like you can tap into pretty much anything else except emotions. Whoa, that's where we're drawing the line, right? But it made me comfortable in the uncomfortable. It made me step into the unknown rather than step away or step on eggshells while I do it. This work has truly just, you know, changed my life. And now that my father has passed on and it's been some time since then, you know, a lot of this work is just keeping this alive for him. You know, of course, I love it. Of course, I love working with young people and seeing that transformation, right? Being that exposure for them to, you know, a lot of kids that I've worked with haven't even seen, you know, a black man in a suit or a black kid in a suit, right? At that time in their lives. And it's like, you know, we were the same age or maybe I was younger, right? So it's like to be that, I absolutely love that. To know that I've had a role in that is amazing. But you know, I feel truly that I am just a body that my experiences and the people who have experienced me are living through. I'm so grateful even in that to, you know, honor a lot of things that were taught to me, people that were brought into my life, and just to live on a deeper level. I understand that there are people in this life who get to float, and that's so cool. I wish at times that I could just kind of like through some stuff, right? I know we're all people.
Yeah.
We all got stuff, but y'all know what I'm talking about. There are people out there who really do just kind of just, you know, things come and it's just like, oh, cool. You know, like whatever, right? I also wouldn't have it any other way. That questioning that I have of things, that intuition that I've built, that awareness that I have, especially of how I show up to whatever it is that externally is out of my control. It's a tough process. It is tough working with all these things and accepting it, right? But I promise there is life on this side. There's livelihood on this side. There still is joy even through the struggle. And that's just a different level of joy right there for me to know I worked for it, struggled for it. It just feels better that way for me. So I don't know, man. It's a lot that this work has done for me. Currently co-facilitating with my mom these 6-month journeys called On the Matter of Race, teaching white people about systemic racism, helping them find a way to combat it. Been doing that about 2 years now. We just had our first live event in person, middle of September, which was absolutely amazing. And I'm getting back to working with young people. So now that I'm in that direction and have that ball rolling, while also offering through all of that conflict resolution kinds of skills, both internally and externally, I'm trying to get back to the kids, man. They need it. They need it more than ever right now. They need exposure to something else. They need to know that they have that toolbox even in the first place and that they don't have to get rid of what was already there per se, that just there's different materials to add to it and to make that bag, you know, more durable. But we need it right now, especially our young people. Being that I am still 22, I know I'm not sounding like it probably, like an old soul, right? But I'm a part of these groups, you know what I mean, that are being affected. That's what helps me speak so well to just like the needs of us as young people, especially when I'm in these all adult settings and I'm the only one, even in my 20s, in that room, right? I really have that perspective and I have the language to it. And it's just troubling times more than ever right now, globally. So I think that's the great stuff about what we do, is that these conversations that we hold and that we have and these skills that we hold and have, they are timeless, they're generational. Pass them on, just like that house or that car or whatever, right? And my family's a walking, living proof of that. As I said, a lot of struggle, a lot of compromise, right? I've had to give up stuff of my own, friends, ways of thinking, right? You know, I'm in therapy to deal with all that right now as we speak. I had the giant therapy before we even came on here.
And I think the thing I want to point out here too, thanks for saying that, because I think it's important, taking our toolbox, you said this a couple times, and expanding it, right? Not necessarily getting rid of things, because sometimes those might be necessary, but expanding that tool set so we can continue to deal with these hard conversations. Because man, that's what you've been doing since you were really young, dealing with hard conversations. And that's something I didn't learn about until much later in my life. I really wish that I could have learned these kind of skills back at the same age when you learned them. My life would have been completely different. And you know, I can lament that all I want, but it's not. So now I can just look at what life's going to be and be like, okay, cool. Now I have the skills. Now I can do something different. But I think you're 100%. It's cool that you've decided to work with some of the young kids again.
Yeah.
Because I think it's much needed, right? And you're closer to their age, right? It's not like an adult now telling them what to do. Like, you are an adult, but you know what I mean,
yep.
Right? It's not like some authority, super authority figure saying, hey, you have to do things this way, right? But have people and being able to replicate a little bit about what happened with you growing up, right? Where you were able to be part of these youth organizations that taught you these skills and where you could peer lead through different conversations and skills and, you know, trainings and stuff like that. I just think it's so cool because there's not enough of that happens. You know, it's mostly go to school, like you're saying, and just like these authority figures tell us what to do. And then we go home. And then it's like, we're so tired of that structure that we're just, you know, off with our friends doing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's no chance to develop those skills when we're young. Like, it all happens when we're old, getting jobs and try to figure things out. And a lot of times it doesn't go very well for us. Or most of the times, like me, I'm going to say, I just avoid them altogether. Right? I just avoid the difficult right. conversations.
Right.
But then what does that do for me? You know?
Right. And that's dangerous, as we've talked about on our own personal time, Jeff, as we've talked about how dangerous that can be. Not that it is, how dangerous it can be. It's possible. Starting all this stuff early, it's possible. It is teachable. And I think that's a lot of also what this work is for us right now, as we are working with families, right? So we are working with parents, and not only parents, like literally their kids as well. How do we put language for all parties of the household to these things? As much as language, as we already talked about, is complex and it changes, there's certain things that I think are just cemented, good or bad, and the definitions of those things, but the sub-definitions.
Yeah. I love talking about language, and Debbie, my wife, and I, we deconstruct words all the time. Like, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to us? Right. And in society, we don't do that. So I love this that you're working with, like, hey, this is what it looks like for kids and the parents, so they can get, the household can get on the same page, because then learning and understanding can happen a lot easier than when, you know, you say a word, like we're going to say, like, what's systemic racism? Well, I have my definition. You have your definition. Somebody else has their definition. We're all might be trying to quote unquote, like, solve it. Not that we're going to solve it any easy, but then we're all attacking it from different perspectives. But if we can get on the same page, if we can get under the same lexicon, right, and what it means and what that kind of looks like, then our efforts are all going to be amplified instead of like competing against one another.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
That dynamic in my household was established very quick, very early in terms of how that paid off. You know, yeah, I'm a human being, right? So I've obviously got my own anxieties. I've got my, you know, I'm still human. This is not at all like I'm coming on here to speak as if, no, I'm a human being. Right. I still have to remind myself at times that I have these skills. This is where I come from, obviously. Right. That's just what we have to do. But I'm not afraid to do that. I'm not afraid to do that. I'm not afraid to make the mistake. I'm not afraid to have the conversation around it. That started so early for me. I thank my parents all the time. I really do. Even my dad in the next life, you know, I'm definitely thanking him for the way that all of this has paid off just on the internal, right? How it pays off in the external, in terms of how I live, in terms of the people I keep around me, in terms of the environment I'm in, all that stuff. Yes, there is a lot of my say in that and my control in that. But even the stuff that is out of my hands, I've really released it out of my garage, right? I feel like I started out as a tool bag, you know, for so long and like kind of like a tool belt, right? Now I feel like on the internal, I'm like a garage of just so many things.
Nice.
That I have access to, so many ways that I could respond to so many different situations that are across difficult topics. And young people comes into the play because I only want to pass that on, that it's possible to respond differently and feel liberated in that. And it's not like you're lesser than, it's not like you're weaker, it's not anything of that, that it can be an empowering thing. To be that exposure, that's really all it is for me. How the money comes and how it looks, we can't take it with us. So I'm not necessarily, you know, hungry for it. I obviously would like to live a nice life, you know, home, a family one day, you know, some dogs, some land, you know, like obviously, of course, that's the dream, right? That's the dream. And because I started this so early, it doesn't feel so much like a dream for me. It does feel like something that easily can be my reality. And I want that for more kids across whoever you are, across all walks of life. Doesn't matter. Whatever you want to live, however you want to live, it's possible. And 9 times out of 10, I can show you a little something about the world that you want to be in.
Dude, I love that. That's so cool. And it's so empowering, right? And just like, this is what I want. And like you just said, like, it feels more attainable now as you've been in this longer, right? And everything you're doing. One thing I'd want to call out too, that I love so much about you, is that you're willing to have these conversations, right? These hard conversations.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, they're just like, ah, it's just another conversation. Like, it doesn't, you don't have to be scared of it.
Yeah.
And sure, we're going to mess up and we're human.
Yeah.
I always have to remind my clients of that too. I'm like, hey, I just ask good questions. Like, I'm human too. Like, so.
Right.
And sometimes.
Can't bank on my response. And if you'll like my response, right? You know what I mean? But absolutely, absolutely. Nothing to be afraid of. Nothing to be afraid of. You know, when you really think about it, words hurt. Yes. Actions hurt. Absolutely. Those are very telling things. But there's times where you just got to listen through. That's a valuable skill, right?
Yeah.
Being that kid in the class who was, you know, stirring up trouble. Some of it good trouble, right? A lot of it not, right? But of the times that it wasn't, you know, and I would have those times where, whether it was handled correctly or not, you know, like that authority talking down to you, right? I had the skills to listen through, to be like, okay, what is it that they really want from me here? What's my role in however they're responding and however whatever's coming up for them? And a lot of times you'll notice responses and the way people respond, that's not your work. That's not your weight to hold. If anything, your job is to hold your end of the space to that. That's being said, right? That's just a part of this conversation that's out there. It was put out there. Just hold it. I really am great now at deciphering what's mine and what's not. This is back to another point that you made before. If you want to achieve change, you do have to give something up. You know, whether it's personally a belief, whether it's, you know, just a piece of advice that someone you trust gave you that you live by, right? And again, that it worked for a while. But being open to the fact that storage and capacity can fill up very quick, especially inside of us. So to relieve yourself of that, you got to give up something. You just do. And that's for anything. And then as far as racism, you know what I mean? I'm not exactly about money being like the only thing that people can give or give up to really affect change. But it might be that friend that, you know, for maybe the first 10 years of your relationship, it was cool to say some of the stuff that he did, but your beliefs just naturally shifted. So the conversation becomes, okay, well, I don't really agree anymore. And what do we do with that?
Yeah.
Right. And having a conversation or letting go of that relationship is hurtful and hard, but it's not as detrimental as you think, as life only presents you with something else to not necessarily fill that void, but take that spot of value, of rhetoric, of culture. I can say that as I've lost a lot, I've only gained so much more in my life. So even losing something doesn't feel as paralyzing as it did even 2 years ago or a year ago, right? Because I'm still human. I'm still working and exercising these muscles as much as I'm teaching it. But even just losing something doesn't feel as detrimental as I know life is going to present me with something else.
Yeah. That's like a mic drop, because it's true, right? We feel like every time we're going to lose something, we're losing it and we're going to be negative, but not necessarily.
It's this open hole or open space mm-hmm. in our hearts, minds, whatever, where it's like, no, bro, I can assure you something else is going to take that spot. I really want to be clear that it's not like filling a void. That's a different thing. But something else, a new way of thinking, a new person that brings out a new side of uncharted territory in you, whatever it is that challenges you, whatever it is, it's that life will give you an opportunity to fill that spot again. So when it comes to racism, as I said, I'm not big on the whole money being the only answer, but can you give up that friend, right? Or can you give up even this topic at the dinner table with this uncle or whatever at family events, right? Like, can you put your foot down in those areas, as even that is just a base point for the more you put your foot down, the more that your environment and your life will literally just naturally start to shift to, you know, the things you really put a stamp on. I'm still hearing bullcrap all the time from people and from things that, you know, I don't agree with and I don't align with, but I've made so much space for all the things that I do and that I am about. At 22, yes, the rest of my life is the uncharted territory. It is the unknown that I'm talking about. And yet I'm nothing but excited for what's to come. Anxious? Yes. But, you know, I'm nothing but excited for what's to come because I know certain things got to go for certain things to be welcomed in.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And if there's anybody to do it, man, that's you.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. We could talk all day. This has been so good.
All day. I swear, Joe Burns, I love what you're doing here. As I said, you know, being someone who got to watch some of the behind the scenes of this come about, right? From just a thought to literally us recording an hour episode right now. I love what you're doing. I love the conversations and the spaces that you're holding. And yeah, any way I can support, brother, I'm here all the way. I love what you're doing. I love you as a person. Shout out Deb Burns. You know what I mean? The Burns family. Great people, man. We're in great hands and we're in great conversation.
100%.
Pleasure.
My life's better because I know you, man. 100%.
That's the goal right there. That's the goal.
To close this up, any last words, especially for you know, our white listeners out there, what would you tell them as a young black man from New York?
Be that exposure. Be that person to say that this is available, right? Not that I'm better because I have this, right? And we're all guilty of that. But really trying to come from the space of, I know you haven't seen this before, whether it's being waited in a restaurant, right? Being served to, right? Going to a ball game, things like that. Be that exposure. I'm telling you, while you're being that exposure for people, there are going to be people who look at you for being weird, for being that exposure. And when that comes, I just say, you know, just stand on it. Stand on business, because the words and affirmations that I hear, you know, even just like what I heard from Joe right now, that is stuff that I'm going to take with me to the afterlife. Like, whenever my time is, I'm 22, I'm not putting out no bad vibes, no bad mojo, right? It's never that, but it's something that I know it just has everlasting effect, and it will forever be a motivator for you when you know that people really can say, you know, outside of, yeah, you exposed me, or outside of you gave me an opportunity, here's what I did with it. And I thank you for even just planting that seed in me. I've seen that transformation. It's one of the most beautiful things that you can either experience for yourself or be witness to in other people and actually have a role in. Be that exposure. We lift as we climb. So take care of yourselves as you're doing all this. And the unknown, uncharted territory, it is scary. But even when you find out what's going on over there, and it is scary when you find out, right? It's still okay. There's still a way to make it okay. Be okay, to leave intact, to leave with energy still to give. We are in troubling times right now, everyone. So these conversations, holding the space, listening through the way that message is being expressed, expanding that toolbox is everything across all generations and all walks of life that people need right now. Just letting you know that there is a 22-year-old black man in the Bronx who's out there with you, being that exposure, planting those seeds, growing toolboxes. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to me. I hope my voice was soothing enough and things of that nature. You know what I mean? Because you had my mom lead the breathing and, you know, all that, all the meditation stuff that we do. As Joe said, we could talk for hours. We already do. To know that we could even just put this together for y'all. And like I said, that you know, I could be a part of this, Joe, is more than enough for me. Thank you all, Joe. Thank you for the opportunity. And seriously, the pleasure was mine. It was awesome.
Ah, thank you, Justin. And thanks for your words of wisdom. I told you all, like at the beginning, this 22-year-old kid, he's not 22-year-old if you listen to him. Like, he's got a wealth of wisdom and knowledge.
Yep.
And the world is a better place because you're in it. So appreciate you.
Thank you, Joe.
So thanks for being here. And until next time, we'll see you all later. Thank you for joining us on Money and Racism. We hope we left you with something to think about. If you like the conversation, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget, please leave a review. To find out more about the psychology and emotion of money, visit www.josephmburns.com. And if you or someone you know would be a great guest for the podcast, email me at podcast@josephmburns.com. Together, we'll work towards a more equitable and just financial world.